This is a recording of a workshop given by Douglas Harding on the 12th of September 1993 in the Phoenix Bookstore in Anaheim, Orange County, California. Douglas was 84 years old. This is part two.
And I think you'll find it's a pretty good fit. Catherine has a white beard, quite nicely known. And then I try it on my friend over there in the blue shirt, Richard, and fits him. It's a bit big for him, but it fits perfectly on his shoulders. But it won't fit on mine. Now, why does it fit so well on other people's shoulders? Because the darn thing belongs on other people's shoulders. It doesn't belong on your shoulders. And when we were very little, we let our faces belong to other people to whom they did indeed belong, didn't we? Your face is my. Your face belongs to everyone but you. It's marvelous. And I put it in the one place where it could never be. It belongs to everyone but me. And when we were very little, we fell in with that beautiful, delightful, delicious arrangement. And we allowed our faces to be in the right place on other shoulders. And that's why we had a charm which we lost when we grew up and committed theft and larceny and stole our faces from those people out there and claimed them and put them here. It's impossible. It's superstition. It's not true. It doesn't work. But it's also damaging. Because the truth is something that kills us, and lies are something that do us harm, and this does us harm. I take my face from you, where it belongs, and shove it on here, and this is tragic, stupid, ridiculous nonsense. And gosh, what a relief, what a relief. To let you look after that darn thing. You know, in my own case, I won't go bore you with that, but my young life as a teenager and beyond, much beyond, was made hell but hell by worrying always about this thing here. How awful it was to have this Douglas face here, and the shame. I experienced all the shame of having a face. Shame. Shame-faced was my middle name. Shame-faced. It was shaming, truly shaming. And I was screwed up to incredible degree by having this thing here. And going into a room full of strangers, trembling, sweating, and introduced to somebody I wanted to impress. Oh my God, make him nonsense with. And all that terrible stuff. Feeling always under inspection. Now to let my face go, let it be there. God, what a relief you'd have. Other people are looking after it. You don't feel under inspection. What a marvelous thing. So where does your face belong? It belongs on other people's shoulders. But there are other reasons for being thankful about that. Because please now go back and get that little one in your sights. Well, you see, for me, particularly, but for you to a much less extent, there is reason for encouragement that I'm not that here, because that one is a perisher. That one is suffering from a terminal disease all life, and every time I look there, he's been nearer the grave. His shelf life is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. This one is doomed, sitting in death row, not quite knowing the date of execution, but the date of birth you could put there, but not the date of death, because it hasn't yet been determined. But just as sure as this one has a birthday, so it has a death day. Well, thank God I can't put it on here. If I could, this would be attempted suicide. Of course, we can't put it on here. And the sting of death is out there, not here. And the victory of the grave is there and it never can come here. I am safe against death and decay here. So it seems to me. So how marvellous it is that it should be there and not here. Keep looking at that one. It's a long way out, isn't it? A long way off, a yard off or more. You can put it on the ceiling now, and you can put it on that wall and this wall, and you can put it in orbit round you, all that way off, and that's where the dancing hangs out. That's where it belongs. That's where other people pick it up, where the camera picks it up, the dog picks it up, and you pick it up in the mirror. And the great human delusion, the most stupid of all our superstitions, and the most damaging, is to take that thing from there and say, that's what I'm like here. And we look in the mirror to see what we're like here. Now I look in the mirror, having come to my senses, I look in the mirror to see what I'm not like here, thank God. I look in my mirror to see what I'm not like, but what other people are getting. Well, I'm sorry for them, perhaps, but I'm not too worried about that, because they look after that thing quite nicely for me. Thank you very much. This is having a facelift, you know, of about a yard. I think it's even good for your face if you're interested in having an interesting face. I think a face that's got, you know, all that it could be. I think don't claim it. Because when you claim it and bring it here, you kill it. I mean, there's something dead about it. Something goes dead when you do that, you know. It belongs to other people. Now, there are other things about this little guy with whom we identified to an incredible degree. Some other things, very small, about 2 inches by 1.5. Come on, are you as small as that? At the near end of your arm? You're not only perishing, but very small, and very complicated, and above all, perhaps, it's not hospitable. It says, keep out, keep out. I trespassers will be prosecuted. I'll not allow you in. And it obscures the background, and it obscures what's behind it, and it is set up against a background. It's like that. Well, now keep looking at that guy and see it for what it is, round the wrong way, too far off to be yours, and round the wrong way, not yours, but belongs to other people. Or it's coming from who you are, but it's what you give to them. And it's not your property because you gave it away. And it's no longer yours. And thank God for that. So here, you're not like that, are you? Well now, what are you like right here at the near end of your arm if you're not like that? Well, we do have a suggestion here in the big one of what you might be like right here. And we turn our attention now to the hole in the card, and we notice how empty it is. And so unlike the little one that's bunged up full of his own stuff, eyes and nose and ears and complexion and all that, this one is empty. This one, the complexion of this one is so clear, it's nobody's business. It never was a clearer complexion than this. It's absolutely, absolutely, immaculately clear, empty, and therefore imperishable. Because nothing can't perish. If there's nothing there, there's nothing to perish. And, but notice, because it's an imperishable nothing, it also mysteriously contains or any kind of perishable stuff that happens to be on display out there at this time. You notice that it takes in the most intimate way the coloured shapes in the room and is them. The space is what fills it, although totally distinct, they come together in total union. Now, wouldn't that be rather nice? Wouldn't it be rather nice to be that imperishable container of all the perishing things in the world? And the perishing things in the world contains, that's a bundle of things, includes stars, galaxies, all the way down to particles, whatever. And they all perish. Everything perishes. All the stuff on display in this emptiness is perishable. And perishing, even galaxies perish. Wouldn't it be marvelous to be this one who is the imperishable container of all the perishing things in the world? And the perishing things in the world, incidentally, include your own feet and legs, because they're surely perishing. They're perishing too. But this one cannot perish. Well now, you are not yet that. You are not yet that, are you? You couldn't be that. Yes. Could we give a card to our new friend? We have decided, we must look at the card and not Douglas. We look at the card and see what's on show there. And we've been looking in the mirror and we have seen that the one in the mirror is perishing and it's round the wrong way and it's out there. And we tried to bring it on here and we failed. We failed to bring it on. And when we brought it on, we brought the mirror on, it disappeared. So this dying thing had to keep its distance. Now we are turning to an alternative identity, which is a hole in the card, and we've noted that this hole in the card is empty of everything and therefore imperishable. It is a hole which has nothing in it to perish whatever, but paradoxically it is full to overflowing with all the things on offer, each of which, even stars at nighttime, each of which is perishing. Now, wouldn't it be marvelous to be that? But we're not yet that for two or three reasons, because it's too far away and it's not awake. I mean, this hole here in the card, you couldn't say it's a kind of lively waking absence, could you? It's a kind of just an ordinary common or garden absence or hole in a card. It's not yet alive. Oh, awake to itself. And it's too far away. And it's not big enough. I have a sense I'm bigger than that. So what we do now is a second crucial part of this experiment, which is to bring it on slowly, try it on like a mask, with great attention, slowly, and see what happens when we do that. And I think you'll find there comes a moment when the whole explodes and becomes infinite, boundless capacity for the whole world and is as wide or wider than the world. And you've succeeded in putting on this imperishable container of the world, did you not? And it grew bigger and bigger till it embraced the world. And even more importantly, it came to life. It is now an awake whole, isn't it? An awake whole. There's a miracle that's happened. It's expanded to be as wide as the world and has come wide awake, because the whole now has become aware of itself as clarity, nothing, full of everything. You're the authority. Don't believe me. Check up on it. this mortal, well, you know what this mortal has just done? It has put on immortality. And didn't it fit? Didn't it fit? You're the authority. This mortal has put on immortality. And when I say this mortal, I'm referring to you personally, first personally. And I think you'll find that in the room now, it's different out there, and that you are the one, you as first person, are the one that's put on immortality. Look what the others are put on. Look around and see how comic they look. They do, don't they? They look quite comic. Charming, but rather funny. Charming, but funny. We have to dare to tell the truth. What is like being first person singular, present tense? Are you not the unbounded, imperishable container of all the things that perish? This one you can't put on. You can't put on death, and the one that is dying remains out there. This one who never dies comes home perfectly imperishable, awake container of all that perishes. You are the authority. You know, this is not superstition. What the superstition is to say, that one comes on here, and what I see in the mirror is what I am like here. That is the most, as I said, the most incredibly stupid, absurd, damaging, lethal, self-destructive piece of superstition you could possibly imagine. And it beats all other superstition, you know, into a cocked hat. It really does. I mean, this is a superstition which is suicidal. Most other superstitions are nonsense, perhaps inconvenient, and some of them are really damaging. But this one is disaster, to say, I'm here, I'm like that guy in the mirror. I'm not. Death keeps its distance. The immortality comes home so sweetly, doesn't it? So neatly and so sweetly. Don't believe me. There it is. I say we have a choice in our life. Which shall we do from now on? Now is a responsibility we have and an opportunity. Shall we lie and lie and lie and say, that's what I'm like? Or shall we lie? Shall we tell the truth and say, that's what I am? That's what I like. I'm like out there. This is what I am here. And this one here, who is this one here? Who is awake to itself? Who is boundless? Who this way is immaculate? This way is full of the whole world. This one, as I said, if you get in your car, you'll see this one never moved. Who is this one here? But the one that's been advertised in all the great religions to be the nearer to us than all else. The indwelling Godhead, Atman Brahman, Buddha nature, you choose your own language, your own words for the superb, simple, obvious reality. Which is so destructive of our damaging superstition. So, Catherine, shall we just... You can have a little rest now while I just quickly go through the stages of our life. There are four stages of our life which are neatly exhibited. You needn't... Keep the cards, please. And I'll just go through, if I may, the four stages of our life, which is so neatly exhibited, I think, in this card. And the first stage of our life is the infant. And the infant, we all started as infants in this particular sphere of activity. We started like that, about 18 inches long and about weighing about 8 pounds. And for ourselves, were we like that? Absolutely not. The infant for itself is as wide as the wide world, isn't it? And the world is a great big booming, smelly confusion, and not well organized, but boundless. The infant wasn't out there looking at itself as a little tiny, limited infant. The infant was as wide as the world. We came in as the big one. This is where we came in to the picture. We came in as the big one. So we all know this place. We've all been there. I'm really suggesting we never left it, but we've all been here. And then we come to the second stage of our life, which is the child, who is still as wide as the world. I'm a healthy child of 3, 4, 5, 6, is still as wide as the wide world. Still unlimited. And this is the charm of a healthy child of that age. It is not out there looking at itself, saying, I'm a charming, healthy child of 6. It is here, being the world. It being as wide as the world. Being at large. Useful expression. At large. Unbounded. A child like that. But the child has joined the human race. Because they kept telling, at first, a little creature in the mirror was baby, a little friend, but gradually, and perhaps not so gradually, one became particularly interested in this one here in the mirror, because everybody kept saying, that's you, that's you, that's you, that's Douglas. I wanted to comply, I wanted to join the human club, I didn't want to be lonely. I would have agreed to anything, not to be left out in the cold. So I said, oh, okay, that's Douglas. Yeah, that's Douglas. So my name is Douglas, and there he is. But somehow he's also here, especially when one was under criticism and naughty and feeling one had to behave oneself properly. One was that little one, but one's still the big one. So when we are healthy children of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like that. That's what we are. This is what we are for ourselves. This is what we are, in effect, for other people. And we join the human race, and we haven't paid the full subscription. What happens? Something happens here. This little guy you will see in the mirror is in a glass cage. It's in a glass bottle. It's in a bottle. It's in a flask, a kind of container, as it were, in a pathological laboratory. There it is behind glass, because it's a dangerous specimen. It's apt to become a parasite, to escape from its container and parasitize the one here. And what it does, in effect, is to do that, in fact, and run up my arm here and parasitize me here. And what do parasites do? They make me tired, they exhaust me, they debilitate me. In the end, if they're very bad parasites, they kill me. And this one is no exception, and it does that. And so we come to the third stage of our life, which is almost unbelievable. Totally normal. And that is the third stage of our life. See, the whole absolutely locked up. In effect, I become my face and I've lost my space. I become my face, I've lost my space. And this is an act of... Then we wonder why we have problems. And we look for esoteric, complicated solutions to our problems. When we live like that, we believe that. And talk about superstition, this is unbelievably nonsensical. How could we live like this? We took in the world. Do we not still take in the world? We'd fall over the furniture if it were like this. We'd get creamed on the highway. Absolute nonsense, isn't it? And it's the human condition. And we've been playing this game for a long time as a race. And I say, time has come, stop playing that game. And what is a game? I am here, what I look like over there. And this is how it works out. and I've lost my space. I've got shrunk overnight from being everything to being almost nothing. If I got shrunk to being nothing, that would have been much, much better. But no, I'm shrunk from being overnight in my teens, from being everything to being almost nothing. And then we wonder why teenagers are angry without knowing why and misbehave in all sorts of ways. I think it's astonishing the way we accept this overnight shrinkage to this. To be everything and overnight to become almost nothing. A lonely stranger and afraid in a world I never made. Well, that's the third stage. Fourth stage of our life is that, isn't it? And the fourth stage we've come to, if we've done the experiments which we have and taken them seriously, and I say, this is what I am. This is what I look like. This is what I am at 0 inches. This is what I am at 50 inches. This is what I'm looking out of. This is what I'm looking at. Out of and at. What a difference those little prepositions make. This is the one I'm looking out of. This is the one I'm looking at. So fourth stage of our life. And we've come to our senses. Come to our senses. Let's just try it on once more. And try it on for comfort. Try it on for clarity, for immensity, for emptiness, for fullness. This mortal has put on immortality, and doesn't it fit like a glove? When we collect the cards together, which I think we can now do, just notice something that happened. I didn't know we had so many people in the room as this. Well, see what happens when we do that. Isn't that interesting? See what happened. Obvious what's happened, isn't it? Here we become one. Here we merge, don't we? Here we come together. Here we're separate. And it's very proper to be separate, and individuality matters enormously. Your particular incarnation, your face, your personality, what you have to contribute as a unique individual, enormously important. But just look and see where it is, which is there, and how it is, which is in competition with and making a noise along with and so on. Those other folks, you see, it's Catherine and Douglas. You know, say getting in each other's way, but a certain amount of obscuration does go on, doesn't it? But look at this. Look at this. And here, Catherine, fits you, doesn't it? And you, my new friend from whose son is in Thailand, and you, it fits everyone, doesn't it? Fit everyone. And so I can say, why, along with you, I mean, whatever. Here's Douglas. Here I'm Douglas. Yeah, I'm you. Now, isn't this the answer to the great problem of our lives, which is loneliness, separation, alienation, lack of love, and so on? This is the ultimate agony, isn't it? Worse than anything else is this separation, loneliness. Failure to communicate. And isn't this the answer? And when I see who I am, I see who you are. Exactly. And I am who you are. And till I am who you are, I'm not well. And I mean that, I really mean that with all my heart. Until I am you, I'm not well. And when I say I am you, I mean this one, this one. I need all the creatures in the world that ever were, are, and shall be to be myself. I need them all because I am them all. And this is healing. Isn't this healing? Isn't this what we want? Isn't this what the doctor ordered? And isn't it the end of our basic superstition? Isn't it the end of that? Well, that's one of our experiments. We're going to have little time for discussion, but we have one or two more. And one or two more experiments, which I'm going to ask my dear Catherine here to show us. She has one or two little experiments. And I'm going to ask Virginia, if Virginia would, to show us an experiment here also. Virginia is so good at this one. May I ask Virginia to show us the single eye one? I began by talking about one of the things I was told, that I'm looking at it, two peepholes and a meatball. This is superstition, and it goes along with this basic thing that I am here, what I look like over there, and along with all our other experiments, of which we have about 20, we're only able to do 3 or 4 today, but we have many, and all of them are journeys home to a place we never left, like the card is a journey home. Because we became eccentric in the second stage and third stage of our lives, we became eccentric. And we went out there and say, I am here, what I look like there, which is crazy. Now, Virginia's going to show us a way home from here to there. From there to here, I mean. And it's about how many eyes we're looking out of. Now, Virginia, if you could just... Perhaps, could you come here and sit near me, and I think you will be audible.
Oh, it's no problem.
No problem.
No problem.
Right.
Well, just, everybody can see me here, so that's safe. Well, as Douglas said, we're all looking out of two eyes because we assume it. I mean, look at everyone in the room, and every human being here with a head has two eyes. And when I was a little girl, and you were a little boy, you assumed that you also had two eyes just like everybody else, because we were in that second stage. We were buying into the human condition. And I had a face like everybody else, and so I must be looking out of two eyes. Now, the problem is, am I? Am I really looking out of two eyes? Am I going to go by hearsay? Or am I going to really look and check up for myself? Because I'm the only one here that is the real subject. So in order to check this, let's all, if you have glasses, hold them out here. This is where your face is. Remember the face in the card. The face was out here, a yard away. So, you have your glasses out here. And if I have two eyes, when I put them on, surely they're going to fit two eyes. My optometrist has made them to fit two eyes. So now, very slowly, maybe if you could open the handles as if you were going to put them on. And now, I'm going to very slowly bring these two eyes up where I was told I have two eyes. Just me, not anybody else. Just me here. And I'm slowly going to put them on and to see whether I still don't have a complete... With the glasses, a complete vision of the whole scene. One eye, one big eye, rather than two. Don't I have one eye? And you can see this one eye by taking your arms, and to the extent that you go off the scene, the entire range of what you can take in now, just the boundaries that your hands can outline all around you. Is this not your vision? Is this not your one eye? Possibly your third eye that the Indians talk about. The famous third eye that one sees with this one eye, this great window with nobody looking out of it, as Douglas has said. One great eye. Not two. Now this is not true of everybody else, because obviously everybody else has two. But in my own experience, checking against all the memories and superstitions and conditioning that I've been told about myself here, what kind of an eye do I look with? How do I see the world? If I had two little eyes, you know, two little eyes, like a microscope, I would look at a speck. I could only see this much at a time. Instead, I get all this. Get all this. And I'm always looking out of that space. So I am single-eyed. That breaks another superstition.
Virginia, isn't it extraordinary? I mean, to plumb the depths of our superstition. Isn't it extraordinary that in our sitting rooms we should know how many windows there are there? And where the how many windows the house has, and we regard that a matter of some importance, to be tell the truth about. Who would think of lying about the window number of windows in our sitting room? But sitting rooms don't matter too much. This sitting room matters a lot, doesn't it? And if I'm lying about that, it's not surprising that my life is all screwed up. I mean, I'm sane in regard to my frame house there, bricks and mortar house, and I go crazy here when it comes to my so-called house of clay here. Well, I better be truthful about, this is the one to be truthful about. And it's diagnostic. It shows how wrong we've got that we lie about such a simple thing. You say, oh, yes, but this is not psychological. It's all very superficial stuff. It's simpleton stuff. Exactly, it's simple stuff. And all that esoteric, complicated stuff is built on this foundations like this, which foundations which are no good. No good. And the single eye is something which has marvelous practical value, because the great thing is, how do we keep this alive? And from having seen it, which we've all done, how do we keep this alive in our lives? And this is a wonderful way of practicing it, isn't it? We can always do that without drawing attention to ourselves. Walking down the street, when we've got somebody there, we can always just see that we're what we're looking out of. And any road home is a good road, and this is a marvellous road home. And we don't have to put on our spectacles to see this. Although if we have spectacles, that's quite the most important use of spectacles is that. Never perceived by anybody, of course, but that's really what spectacles are for, is to give you remind you of your single eye. I mean, all that magnification stuff is kind of incidental, really, isn't it? Well, so I think, anyway.
Just another aspect, too, it occurs to me. Really, if I have no face here, if there's nothing here except this clarity, I surely couldn't have eyes either.
Well, of course.
And in the...
Eyes would bung it up, wouldn't it?
The Heart Sutra of Zen Buddhism starts with, here, no eye, no eyes, no ears.
That's right.
I mean, they say it 1,000 times a day in their monastery. Here, no eyes.
That's right. We don't see through our eyes. We see through our eyes, we don't see with our eyes. No. Our condition of our eyes determines what we see, but not that we see. Of course, if our eyes are in bad shape, we get a different vision of the world. But if the sun is in bad shape, we get a different vision of the world. Or if we draw the blinds down, and a thousand things are conditioning what I see. But that I see is another deal. And it's the function of who I really am. Well, thank you, dear, very much. And that is a thing, that's a way home that we can all use. Any way home's a good way, and there are millions of ways home, actually. And I'm going to ask Catherine to show, if she would kindly show us another one with the aid of this pointing finger.
Well, as Deborah said, it's for the one eye. It's simple stuff, maybe, but so it's so essential because it makes all the difference when we live, even in our everyday life, to live from this big window, this huge space. It's just so different from living from this locked up meatball and two little eyeballs here. It's completely different. And you can experiment when you come out of here, just in the street, walking around and feeling you are the world here, as wide as the world, because here there is a huge window, frameless and glassless, and it's just completely different. Your life changes completely. And the other vehicle to come back here and see that, it's your finger, which is always available, and which, will you please take out now? Oh, what do you say? use now. Well, this finger is used to point at things. So if it's true that we have a meatball, we should be able to point at it and see it. Well, let's try and see and compare. Can you please point at the ceiling? No. And here you can see that your finger is pointing, which is thin, opaque, and with a shape and color, is pointing at another thing, which is also colored, shaped, and the two things are perishable. Now, if you will please bring your finger down and point it at what's ahead of you. It may be a wall, or a person, or a chair, or whatever it is, it's a thing. And again, you have your finger, which is a thing, pointing at a thing. And both are opaque and dense, and have a texture, and a shape, and have a background, and are perishable. This wall, or this person, or this chair are going to disappear someday. Now, if you will please turn your fingers down and point at the floor and straight at your feet. Again, your finger, which is a thing, is pointing at things which have color, shape, density, and which are perishable. Now, will you please turn your finger around and point at your tummy. Now, here you have your finger, which is a thing, maybe a space, a colored space, colored by the background, and a thing which is your tummy. And all these things are solid and colored, and they are perishable. Now when you come up and point at your chest, again, thing pointing at thing. And now very slowly, please, you come up, take your finger up and point at what is above your chest, at what you're looking out of. Now, do you find that your finger, which is thing, is pointing at another thing? Or is it not pointing at an empty space? Boundless, transparent, completely pure, clear, a space which is capacity for the whole world, because it is empty, but it is full of the seen, and the two are one. the space which is void is the world which is shape, form. Void is form and form is void, and it's all one thing. But here you are capacity for the whole world. Are you not?
Now I think Catherine, we should talk about practicalities for living of this, the consequences for living, and that'll be connected with keeping it up. And I'm wondering whether we don't have time for a very quick paper bag.